Hello, listeners. Welcome to the Essentials of Healthy Living on Progressive Talk AM 1260, brought to you by the Village Green Apothecary. I'm Dana Lake, your host for the next hour, and I'm pleased to tell you that you can tune in every Saturday morning at 10 a.m. to hear our show. I have a co-host, Kevin Passero. You've heard him before if you've been listening to our shows. He and I will be alternating shows, and those shows are dedicated to your health, diet, nutrition, lifestyle, and exercise. I'm also reminding you that the show is streamed through myvillagegreen.com. And myvillagegreen.com is a great place to go for advice on supplements, expert advice, and green advice. Now, the topics today we're going to cover, as we usually do, news you can use. And we've got some interesting one. Oops on the old alcohol advice. Less is best for cancers. We'll cover that. And the benefits of coffee. And many of you have never heard me say that, so we'll talk about that. Daylight saving time and your heart. Some interesting news. And what's good about eggs, lard, butter, and saturated fatty acids. So we'll talk about that as well. We will have a very special guest, Elizabeth Blumberg. She's a colleague, a registered dietitian, licensed nutritionist, and we will discuss the subject of nutrition and stress management with Elizabeth. And I want to remind you, go to the Village Green site and ask the expert. Now, some of the news you can use. This is very new. It was just in the paper. You may have read it. But one drink a day raises women's risk of cancer. And this was a study on 1.3 million middle-aged British women. And it also found a relationship with other cancers, including liver and rectum. If women also smoked, the risk for mouth and throat cancer increased. So in the U.S., drinking mildly to heavily accounts for 20,000 extra cases of breast cancer per year. They extrapolated the information from the British study to the U.S. since our diets are quite similar. There was no difference between wine, beer, or any type of alcohol, ladies, so it really doesn't matter what the alcohol is. One drink is a problem, and no threshold seems to be safe. Two drinks increases the risk for cancer significantly to 30 extra cases of cancer per 1,000 people. Now, that's a double, so one drink a day increases your risk somewhere around 10 to 15%, and two drinks a day ups it to 30 or 40% risk, and that's from another study. So even though the studies aren't identical, they are giving us some very similar information. Now, another little bit of news you can use. Good news for coffee drinkers. The antioxidants in coffee can reduce inflammation. And this was a study of 128,000 middle-aged men and women for about 18 to 24 years. This was a long study. Caffeinated coffee consumers had 18% lower rate of death from all types of causes, especially cardiovascular disease. That's 18% lower rate. And caution on this, too much can raise blood pressure, increase stress hormones, and interfere with sleep, which increases obesity. So moderation is what counts, but we thought moderation in alcohol was the advice, and now it's found the less the best. And back to the alcohol, there was a previous study that indicated abstinence did not improve your health, and drinking daily did not. The best results were intermittent consumers of alcohol. In other words, people who drink it occasionally, maybe have a drink on the weekend. Now, this may be random, but here it is, daylight saving time. We're going to spring forward this year, or at this time this year, can increase heart attacks 5%. Now, that's a small amount, but it's interesting. And the comparisons were done on 2 weeks before and 2 weeks after the switch. The theory is that the loss of sleep disrupts biological rhythms adversely, and that affects the heart. So March 8th is the day, and the best advice is catch up on your sleep before and after and avoid that slight increased risk. Now, some information on lard and consumption rates. I use this in the lectures I give. There's just some beautiful graphs, so I'll try to explain to you what these graphs show. They compare the intake of butter, lard, and trans fatty acids beginning with 1909 and to the current, meaning 2000. This was done up to the year 2000. Butter decreased significantly, lard decreased significantly, and trans fatty acids increased significantly. So when we hear that the intake of butter and lard are associated with increases in cardiovascular disease, the opposite is true. And we have two things going on here. We decreased those natural fats, butter and lard, and we replaced them with the mutant plastic fatty acids known as trans fatty acids from hydrogenation, commercial hydrogenation. And that's the double whammy. We took away what really are good fats and we replaced them with terrible fats. And then there was a nice little graph, and I took the data and actually graphed it, on the decreased intake of eggs and increased risk of heart disease. We compared this from 1945 through 2000, and it was eggs per week. And what we found was that we were eating about 7.5 eggs per week in 45. And then from the 70s, in the 70s, from 1970 to 79, it dropped to about 5 eggs per week. Then in 1980 to 1989, it dropped again to about 4.5. And then from 1990 to 2000, it has stayed a little below 4.5. And that's per week. But during that time, cardiovascular disease increased exponentially. Then we look at the studies, and there are numerous good scientific studies on the effects of egg consumption on human beings. And guess what? It's an inverse relationship with cardiovascular disease. What that means is the greater the consumption of eggs, the lower the risk for cardiovascular disease. Those tests have been repeated, and other summaries from studies indicate that there is no connection between egg consumption and cardiovascular risk. And you've heard me talk about this before. I'm just giving you a nice little update. If you look throughout the world, it's also interesting. Japan has among probably the highest egg intake and one of the lowest cardiovascular disease death rates. In the U.S. and in England, we have far less egg intake than Japan, and our cardiovascular deaths are almost twice as high. So that's quite interesting if we look at world studies. There was also another study comparing myocardial infarction, MI, that's heart attack, with consumption of animal fat, butter fat, and eggs. And again, it showed a downhill slide on the consumption over time, meaning the past 50 to 60 years, of animal fat, butter, and eggs, with a sharp increase, sharp incline in MIs or heart attacks. So if somebody tells you to avoid eggs, remind them that the egg is now considered a nutrient-dense, quality, functional food. It is full of nutrients, has choline for the brain, it does increase HDL, and it does not raise serum cholesterol significantly, and it does not cause heart disease. This is Dana Lake, and you're listening to The Essentials of Healthy Living on Progressive Talk AM 1260. Brought to you by the Village Green Apothecary. Stay with us. We'll be talking about nutrition and stress management. Welcome back to the show, listeners. This is The Essentials of Healthy Living, sponsored by Village Green Apothecary. I'm Dana Lake, your host for the hour. We're glad to have you here today. And I'm also glad to introduce you to Elizabeth Blumberg. She's a registered dietitian and a licensed nutritionist, and she has her own her own practice, and she has a lot to share with us. Welcome to the show, Elizabeth.
Hi, Dana. Thanks for having me.
Well, we worked together before, and I always enjoy having colleagues on the show. So thank you for gracing us with your expertise and presence.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
We are going to talk about stress, but first, let the listeners know a little bit about your practice and what you do.
Sure. Well, my practice is EB Nutrition, and it's located in Rockville, Maryland. And I work with individuals who have a variety of nutritional needs, from weight loss, of course, to various medical issues. Basically, the way I put it simply is anything you would go see your doctor for, you can come to see me. I try to treat it naturally from a nutritional perspective. And, you know, we also have trainers on staff. So we are kind of a hybrid, if you will, of nutrition and fitness. So we really try to incorporate both aspects into healthy well-being.
That's wonderful that you've got both going on in the same organization. Well, let's get to the subject of stress. We talk about it a lot on the show, but I think every time we discuss it, we find something new to bring to the table. Let's start out and let's describe a little bit about stress and what happens to the body, Elizabeth.
Sure. Well, the adrenal glands are your stress coping glands. And when the body undergoes any form of stress, whether it's acute or chronic, it secretes a variety of hormones. And what's interesting about this is that stress is so often coined as being bad, but there are certainly forms of good stress as well as bad stress. And one form of bad stress is also referred to as distress, which really imposes a lot of negative changes upon the system. But eustress is actually a type of good stress imposed upon the body because as individuals, as human beings, in fact, we're actually designed to recover well from stress. But it's acute stress that is actually the more beneficial form of stress that induces a lot of positive changes in the body on a physical level as well as a physiological level, whereas chronic stress, on the other hand, has more of a negative impact. It can cause various changes in the immune system as well as metabolic function and have a lot of long-term detrimental effects on various individuals.
Well, I think the important thing here is that we were meant to have stress. I mean, there's really no such thing as absolutely stress-free, and
exactly.
I don't think we'd be very healthy.
Exactly.
And there are actually some studies that show benefits of stress on motivation and even on pregnant women, as long as it's not chronic and as long as there's recovery. And that seems to be the difference between acute and chronic. Chronic means you just don't recover.
Exactly.
So what can people do about their stress? Let's talk about some, I always like to give our listeners something they can immediately start using.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
Some tips.
Well, when it comes to nutrition, obviously that's my area of expertise, so I'm always trying to impart some understanding about how you can control how your body responds to stress. So you may not be able to control the stress in your life, but by making certain lifestyle and nutrition choices, you can change the way, in fact, you respond. One such example would be to be sure to consume foods that are more whole food based. In fact, foods that come from whole food sources, such as whole grains, beans, legumes, lean proteins, have been shown to stimulate the metabolism and support the adrenal glands, again, which are your stress coping glands. If you try to avoid those that are what I call the nasties, which are sugar and refined processed carbohydrates, such as white pasta and white bread and other white flour-based foods, these are the types of foods that I call high-stress foods. And they, in fact, cause a lot of stress on the body while you're already undergoing a lot of stress in your life. So it just adds fuel to the fire, if you will.
It sure does. And it's the differentiating between carbohydrates that are bad and carbohydrates that are good, because people tend to use that term carbos as meaning all negative.
Exactly. Exactly.
So the lean proteins, whole foods, are very important. And this gets into glucose control. And I would like to explore a little bit more about glucose control and the adrenals. I think we haven't focused on that mm-hmm. as much in some of our other shows. And to me, it's the cornerstone of not just glucose control, but keeping your adrenals healthy.
Absolutely. Well, when you undergo stress, your body produces cortisol. And one of the reactions of cortisol is to actually flood the body with sugar or glucose. It's a way for the body to try to access as much energy as it possibly can under these times of stress. So the adrenal gland definitely plays a significant role in the effects of the blood sugars, and therefore your body, particularly if you are blood or sugar sensitive, for example, if you have high blood sugar, such as diabetes, or if you even have low blood sugar, such as hypoglycemia, it can really create a very challenging state, and it can result in fatigue, it can result in irritability, hunger, food cravings, and also depression as well as anxiety. So blood sugar control is really pivotal when it comes to the state of your adrenal gland health, which in turn affects the state of your level of stress.
And what I think is a good idea here is to let people know what some of the signs and symptoms of low adrenals are. I think people are used to thinking of adrenals as some obscure set of glands and not really clear on whether people have extreme adrenal problems and that's a disease versus what we're talking about is really poorly functioning adrenals that are just overstressed and would like to recover.
Exactly. Well, adrenals that are in the state that you just described, someone that you've often referred to as the walking wounded, who may not be clinically sick or diseased, but just have a really poor quality health. Symptoms that you can look for to recognize would include fatigue, would include also irritability, again, depression, anxiety, problems focusing and concentrating are also telltale signs that your adrenal glands have been challenged. And I think most importantly is someone who struggles to lose weight. Certainly weight loss and metabolism is a real hot topic these days. And I find it in my practice, if someone comes in and they tell me they've been trying everything from exercise to eating well and reducing their calories, but they just don't seem to be able to get off those extra pounds, I automatically know that there could potentially be something going on with their adrenal gland health.
Those are good signs and symptoms. Also, people will have cold extremities. They can't warm up easily. They get dizzy if they stand up quickly. And they're hungry frequently, which leads back to what you were talking about, Elizabeth, with this poor glucose control.
Exactly.
Where people have to eat to keep their blood sugar stable instead of allowing the adrenals to do so naturally. For our listeners, what they do is convert stored glycogen to glucose, and that keeps us from needing to eat all the time. But when they're tired, they don't stand up for us.
Exactly. And you're in a perpetual state of hunger, like you said, and you continue this vicious cycle of self-medicating to treat the symptoms over and over again.
You know, there's a cute little test, and I think you might remember this. It's the pupil constriction test, and you can have someone do it on you at home. You darken a room and you close your eyes, and you have someone use just a pen light, and they're going to shine it not directly in your pupil, but a little to the side. And you open your eyes, and they shine it at the side and count how long you hold the constriction. And people that can't hold it 3 seconds are those with poor adrenals. And they're usually the people that will get woozy or dizzy, feel foggy in the head when they stand up quickly, and would certainly fail or do poorly on the test that's done, the tilt table test that some of the medical the universities are doing, where they strap people in, take the blood pressure, then whip them up. When they pass out, they don't fall. So I'm advocating that people don't try to do the laying down, taking the blood pressure, and jumping up quickly, because you can get dizzy and faint. So that's just an interesting little tidbit. What else can we talk about, signs and symptoms of adrenals that people might not be aware of?
Well, again, I like to focus on metabolism a lot, and you did mention having cold extremities, which does relate to your internal thermostat. Some people also experience other changes in hair, skin, and nails, for example. A lot of times when your body is under stress, your digestion is disrupted, so you're not absorbing nutrients as efficiently. So therefore, your hair, skin, and nails might just start to show some signs and symptoms of change. There are other clinical manifestations. As you were talking about the eyes, it made me think about looking at the tongue, for example. Changes in the tongue patterns, for example, ridges in the tongue may indicate some form of B vitamin malabsorption. It might also indicate digestive disturbances. Again, all of these things go along with poor adrenal health in general.
Well, when the adrenals are down, the rest of the system's down,
exactly.
So you're not going to make the enzymes you need, and it's certainly a cascade. Mm-hmm. Well, I think we've covered a lot. We are definitely going to take a brief break, and I want our listeners to know we'll be back. We'll be giving you more ideas on how to keep your adrenals strong, how to treat stress, and manage stress. So stay with us. You're listening to The Essentials of Healthy Living, sponsored by Village Green. I'm Dana Lake, your host for this hour, and we're talking to Elizabeth, and we will be back and have another good conversation with Elizabeth Blumberg. Thank you. Hello, welcome back, listeners, to The Essentials of Healthy Living, sponsored by Village Green Apothecary. I'm Dana Lake, your host for the hour, and we've been talking with Elizabeth Blumberg, who's registered dietitian and licensed nutritionist, and she owns and works at EB Nutrition, her company. They do nutritional counseling, and they also have training. Welcome back to the show, Elizabeth.
Thank you, Dana.
We were talking about the adrenals, those anti-stress glands, their participation in stress, what happens with stress, glucose control problems, the necessity of eating whole foods, and we talked about some signs and symptoms. So where do you want to go from here? What else do we want to share with the listeners?
Well, I also thought it would be worth noting, especially for the women in the audience, that adrenals are very important for female hormone balance. Another sign and symptom of adrenal dysfunction, if you will, is PMS, premenstrual syndrome. And when the adrenals are not functioning properly, as you said, it has a cascade effect on the entire system in the body. So you do not utilize your hormones as efficiently, and there tends to be even a greater imbalance in, for example, estrogen and progesterone. So I have a lot of women who come in to see me as well for really challenging menstrual symptoms, and oftentimes the adrenals are the area to be focusing on, as opposed to just looking at the hormones themselves. And then that can bring us back to the diet and how the diet can really help to support not just the adrenal glands, but also female hormone production as well.
So we talked about acute stress versus chronic stress, and it's the chronic stress that's the problem.
Exactly.
But we've also hammered on the carbs, and I like your idea of debunking carb myths.
Yes.
And how eating too few is a problem and too many. So let's help them get that straight.
Exactly. Well, that's one of my favorite topics. In fact, eating too few carbs can cause a suppression of insulin, which in the short term will cause some weight loss. But it's usually causing the muscle to break down, and it's also causing water loss. So this does show a drop on the scale, and this is one of the reasons why so many of those diets out there now are touting restricting carbohydrates. Unfortunately, one thing they're not doing is focusing as much on good versus bad, and we can get more specifically into that in a few minutes. But in the long term, what's very interesting is that if you suppress insulin for a prolonged period of time, this can, in fact, increase the level of stress hormones, which ultimately can result in a redistribution of fat, specifically even from the extremities, such as the arms and the legs, to the belly. And oftentimes you can recognize a person who has some form of adrenal stress or even imbalanced blood sugars by looking at their actual weight distribution, which is often in the midsection.
You know, now that you mention this, and I just thought of this, this may be the link to the use of artificial sweeteners that do not, the body doesn't recognize that as a sugar, doesn't know how to handle it, and the response is more weight gain and more hunger. And what you're saying is very similar, that when you're not getting some insulin stimulation, that you get into trouble with actually increasing fat, and I would imagine going into a slower metabolic mode.
Exactly.
That's very interesting for people. So let's
Yes. Let's
talk about the good and bad carbs.
Sure. Well, our good carbohydrates are most popularly known as complex carbohydrates. And just kind of a broad description, they include whole grains, beans and lentils, fruits and vegetables, also sweet potato and corn. But the simple carbohydrates are the ones that are ultimately to be avoided, and these are the ones that are certainly in junk foods and sugar and processed carbohydrates, again, such as the white pasta and bread that I mentioned earlier, that cause more stress on the body. What I like to really focus on, though, here is a couple of things. Number one, choosing from the quality carbohydrate options is ideal, but you can also have too much of a good thing. So just as we said that you certainly don't want to have too few carbohydrates, you also don't want to have too many, even if they come from a good quality source. So it's very important to make sure that you choose wisely from a quality perspective. And also worth mentioning is whole grains, because whole grains are not all created equal. And one particular example, something that I learned directly from you, is that modern-day wheat is very different than the wheat that was once consumed by our ancestors. And many people oftentimes have very difficult times digesting wheat and other gluten-based grains, and this in turn can create more stress on their body and their digestion as well. So some individuals might need to go a little lighter on the grain category and bulk up a little bit more on higher fiber vegetables, sweet potatoes, fruits and vegetables of that sort.
Right. There is, as you and I know, there's no one diet for all people on earth. And it seems like people are always striving to find out the diet. We've got the answer right here. We see Eskimo diets are different than Hawaiian diets, are different than Asian diets. And what the challenge is for each person to figure it out. I always tell people to stick with a given diet for 1 or 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. And it takes a few days to go through the change. And if you're not maintaining energy, if you're tired, don't feel rested when you sleep, feel full or bloated, have digestive problems, then that diet isn't working for you.
Exactly.
What else can we tell them about how to figure out whether they need more protein, more of the complex carbos, or less, and patterns of eating?
Sure. Well, one good way to determine if you need more protein is if you're tired. Oftentimes, fatigue sets in from insufficient protein intake. This can also be a result of eating too many carbohydrates. So the way you eat your meals in combination is extremely important. And in fact, having a protein, a carbohydrate, and a fat serving at every meal, as well as every snack, is the ideal way to keep your stress levels balanced and your adrenal glands and your total body healthy, in fact. And not only that, but the timing of your meals is extremely important, as you asked about meal patterns. I find oftentimes, you know, there's the expression, of course, you are what you eat, but I often find that people are when they eat as well, and that when they eat dictates their level of hunger and, of course, their level of stress, and therefore the types of foods they're ultimately going to consume and how much they're going to consume as well.
Well, do you think there's a standard as to how people should eat in that pattern with regard to what to eat upon rising, midday, later in the day, late snacks, etc.?
Yes, I do. In the morning, I feel it's very important specifically to have some form of protein. And for sure, you must break the fast. I mean, skipping breakfast is probably one of the worst things people can do, and breakfast does set the standard for the rest of the day. So having some form of protein, whether it be an egg, as you spoke about eggs earlier, that would be an excellent source of protein as well as healthy fat. You could also even have, if you tolerate dairy, have some form of yogurt. I oftentimes recommend the Greek strained yogurt. That's very healthy, and in fact, it's the higher protein form of yogurt as well. As the day moves about, you do want to make sure that you spread your meals out every 3 to 4 hours. Now, if you're more active, then you should be consuming a meal even as early as 2 to 3 hours after you've eaten your last meal or snack. before your lunch, you definitely want, again, to make sure that your highlight item is still protein. Oftentimes, people have a tendency to overindulge in carbohydrates in for their lunch meal, and this in turn results in a lot of fatigue at the end of the day, which then is followed by medicating with caffeine and sugar. And then ultimately, as the day moves on, our bodies don't digest and metabolize carbohydrates as efficiently. So I oftentimes suggest that when you do have carbohydrates, you do try to have them at your earlier meals, which would be distributed from breakfast as well as lunch and also in between meal snacks. For dinner, especially for someone who's not as active, I usually suggest eating a smaller amount of carbohydrate if, in fact, you're perhaps trying to lose weight, for example. Your body is oftentimes able to digest proteins and vegetables, those forms of carbohydrates, a little more efficiently in the evening. And do be sure to allow at least 2 to 3 hours from your dinner meal until bedtime.
That's a good reminder. It not only helps your sleep because you're not busy digesting when you should be sleeping, it prevents reflux, which is such a common problem today.
Exactly.
Well, you've given us a lot of good ideas. What about sleep and stress? Let's start talking about that. And in our final and next segment, I do want to give them some suggestions as far as nutrients and stress.
Sure.
So just a brief word about sleep and stress.
Sure. Well, again, a very interesting topic. I think it's getting a lot more attention these days. But when the body does not have enough time to restore and recover, it's not going to function as efficiently. And a direct result of poor sleep habits is an increase in your stress hormone production. And this, in turn, can create a cascade of effects ranging from depression to metabolic disturbances to high blood glucose levels, in fact. And I find that many cases of individuals who are trying to optimize their weight or, again, get their blood sugars under control, if they have been unsuccessful due to their efforts, so they have not gotten a return on their investment in the process, I find that the level of sleep, or the lack thereof, rather, is oftentimes what the concern is, what the underlying concern. So you can do everything perfectly during the day, but if your sleep isn't in place, then your body will not get the restoration and recovery it needs to function optimally.
Very well said. I call sleep a nutrient.
I do too. I do too.
And it is sometimes the most beneficial thing you can do. Sometimes you just can't override a lack of sleep, poor sleep habits with nutrients or anything else. They just need sleep.
Exactly.
Well, we're going to finish our conversation, and Elizabeth, thank you for being with us. We'll hang in there, and I want to remind our listeners to stay with us. We'll be back for the final segment of The Essentials of Healthy Living on Progressive Talk AM 1260. This is Dana Lake, your host. We'll be right back. Hello, listeners. Welcome back to The Essentials of Healthy Living, brought to you by Village Green Apothecary. This is our final segment. We're talking about stress and nutrition, and we've been discussing it with Elizabeth Blumberg, dietitian, nutritionist, and owner of EB Nutrition, right here in our local area. And I'm going to give you her website. It's very simple, www.ebnutrition.com. That's ebnutrition.com. We've been talking about stress. We talked about low blood pressure, weakness, pupils that don't constrict and hold, hormonal problems, fatigue, and poor focus. So we mentioned that as signs and symptoms and the importance of good protein, good complex high-fiber carbohydrates, the need to maybe eat frequently, and the importance of sleep. What I'd like to do, Elizabeth, is mention a few of the tests that are available for testing adrenal function, which plays such an important role, of course, as the anti-stress glands.
Sure. Well, I think the most popular test is the adrenal stress index test. It's also referred to as an ASI test. And it's a saliva test that measures cortisol, which is, again, the stress hormone that's produced by the adrenal glands, at varying points throughout the day. And what I find so helpful about this test is that it gives you a full picture of what's going on throughout the course of the morning, the afternoon, and the evening, as opposed to getting a blood draw, for example, at your physician's office that tells you where you might be at one particular point in the day. In the morning, our bodies typically produce the highest amount of cortisol, and as the day moves on, it gradually declines. So it gives you a very nice visual illustration of the ideal range and where you might fall. In addition to that, it also looks at various levels of hormones, such as progesterone. It also looks at insulin levels. And lastly, there's a hormone that protects our stomach, an antibody, rather, that protects our stomach called secretory IgA, which is oftentimes found at very low levels in a very adrenally stressed individual. So that's very helpful to pinpoint, especially if you're having digestive problems. So it's a very comprehensive test. Again, it's a saliva test, and it's very inexpensive as well.
I think it's an elegant test. And for patients, it's such a visual to see what they're doing morning, noon, afternoon, and evening, and to compare that pattern with a normal pattern. So I've used it for years, and I know you have too.
Yes.
And we find it helpful. The other test, the blood test, that is a stimulation test, really challenges the adrenals to see if they can still put out cortisol. And that can be very challenging for an already weak adrenal, and it's better at identifying really almost the end stage of adrenal fatigue into low adrenal function, which can go on long term.
Exactly.
So what we're dealing with most of the time are just inefficiencies in the adrenals. What about the nutrients that can help support glucose control, reduce stress? Let's talk about those, and that's something that that's a message people can take home, some clinical pearls.
Definitely like that, clinical pearls. Well, in general, again, as we've noted, the adrenal glands do have a direct effect on the blood sugar. So if you were to just simply work on supporting the adrenals, some of the most important nutrients, in fact, they're found in the highest concentration in the adrenal glands, one is vitamin C. Vitamin C is of the utmost importance. In fact, when you're under stress, your body is oftentimes depleted significantly of its vitamin C store, so it's important to replenish. Oftentimes, we are unable to get enough vitamin C from the foods we eat, which is typically found in fruits and vegetables, so we usually have to provide some form of supplementation. Another nutrient that's also found in very high doses in the adrenal glands is vitamin B5, also known as pantothenic acid. And this, to me, is an anti-stress nutrient. B5 is found naturally in almonds, strawberries, tomato, and cauliflower. So you can get trace amounts of it in your diet, but again, oftentimes in states of adrenal stress, it's important to provide some form of vitamin supplementation. And also there's biotin, which I think also covers the blood sugar department as well. Biotin is a B vitamin, and it's naturally found in egg yolk and spinach as well as broccoli. Biotin is very helpful for supporting the health of hair, skin, and nails, but it also plays an extremely important role in adrenal health. And in turn, it also helps to improve your body's ability to utilize insulin and glucose, rather, at the cellular level. So it can have a very helpful effect on blood glucose control.
It certainly can, and most people are not aware it's one of the vitamins we produce in the gut,
yes,
and that is depleted by the use of antibiotics.
Mm-hmm.
So if we don't get enough biotin, we have poor fatty acid production, and as you said, poor skin and hair, but also poor adrenals. And to support the adrenals, we always want good core energy metabolism, and I compare that to having enough electricity in the house so you're not blowing fuses and your lights are dim. And you know, some people's lights are dim. They don't make enough core energy, and the adrenals may be secondary. Low adrenal function can be secondary to just poor core energy metabolism, and all of the nutrients you mentioned support it, as well as coenzyme Q10, amino acids, especially tyrosine,
exactly,
magnesium, and as you mentioned, the B vitamins. So when we start doing that, people will start to have better energy, mm-hmm, stop craving all the sugars, and they'll start to improve.
Exactly.
Any other tidbits and clinical pearls?
Well, I was also going to mention glutamine. Glutamine is an amino acid that's also very helpful for blood sugar control. So it helps to prevent that extra hunger and those cravings, which usually results in choosing the wrong foods and the wrong quantities. But it also supports the health of the gastrointestinal system as well, and it actually helps to reseed the gut mucosa, which is very helpful for a lot of people who have digestive problems, which are oftentimes, again, a result of acute and or chronic stress. So actually, glutamine is probably one of the most helpful nutrients I find across the board for most people. And there are certain implications that would suggest perhaps not to use L-glutamine. For example, if someone does have high blood sugar, I typically wouldn't recommend using high doses of L-glutamine because it can actually help to raise the blood sugar ever so slightly. So it is always important, I like to mention to everyone, be sure to consult a health professional before consuming any specific vitamins at various dosages, especially if you're taking medications.
You know, that's a good warning. And I think throwing in the mix, we're almost creating what I call chicken noodle soup of the nutrient world, but they're synergistic, and that's zinc, which is part of the insulin molecule and is depleted by the white diet and plays an important role in glucose control, and chromium, which helps the functioning of glucose. So I think we have covered a lot. Any parting words, Elizabeth?
Any parting words? Well, I would just encourage the listeners to listen to your body. Listen. When it calls out to you, when you notice something that doesn't seem quite right, your body is sending you a message, and it's up to you to tune in and listen to what it's trying to tell you, because oftentimes, if you just pay attention, you can figure it out. We have the power to heal ourselves, so just pay attention to your body.
Very nicely said, and thank you for being here, and I know you'll be back with us on the show in a later time.
Thank you so much, Dana, for having me.
Okay. Well, listeners, I hope you got a lot of clinical pearls, and it was good to have Elizabeth talk to us. And I want to remind you that you can have many relatives, even many spouses and colleagues and friends, but you only have one body, and it's up to you to take care of that body. I'm reminding you to go on MyVillageGreen.com for expert advice, and go by MyVillageGreen.com, the Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda on West Cedar Lane. It's a wonderful, wonderful place. They will help you. They will talk with you. And they can help you through Essentials of Healthy Living individualize your nutrition and what is exactly right for your age, your stage, your gender, and your health conditions. So that's MyVillageGreen.com and going over to Village Green Apothecary. They will welcome you with open arms. And remember to go green with Village Green. They have a green program and you'll be interested in that. Just a reminder on success. Success is not the key to happiness. Happiness is the key to success. If you love what you are doing, you will be successful. So to our listeners, I thank you for joining us and remind you to tune in to Progressive Talk AM 1260 every Saturday morning for Kevin Pissarro or myself as your host. And on behalf of Village Green, and myself, I wish each and every one of you good health and a really great day.